welcome everybody to the Magic Beans podcast. We're here again for episode number 7. I am your host and my name is Shorty, and I am joined tonight by a whole bunch of beans again. On the line with me we have Scott the Blaster Boy. How you going, Scott?
Hey, not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. We also have Chewy. How you going, Chew?
Ben Hogak.
I think that may come up a little bit tonight, so yeah, just save that one up. We also have Cracker. How you going, Cracker?
Very well, thank you, mate.
That's away. And Chris.
How's it going?
Pretty good. I don't ask how you're going, just assume that you're doing well. So
I'm good.
Exclusive. Very good. So tonight we have a packed episode. We've been leading up to it the last couple of weeks with our topics and things we've been talking about. This weekend is our MCQ. So as we've mentioned, Modern MCQ coming up. It's pretty exciting for us, pretty big tournament. We haven't been out to play an actual tournament for a while. So yeah, we've been doing the prep and doing the hard yards. And tonight we're going to have a bit more of a chat about that. And yeah, sort of touch on what decks we've decided to lock in on and what our, a few pointers and a few tips on what to expect from your first tournament. So the first thing we wanted to touch on tonight is, as Chewy mentioned, Hogak. What do we think? What's going on, guys? We've just had another weekend of another major modern tournament, a Grand Prix. And how many Hogak decks do we have in the top 8?
All of them.
we had 5.
Five. So do you want to read through that top 8? So this was GP Minneapolis.
Yeah. So it was Hogak and Hogak finals, Hogak in third. Then it was like Mono Red Phoenix, Burn, Hogak, Hogak, Humans.
Right. Five out of the top 8. So yeah, still proving that even with the amount of hate that everybody's packing, it can still perform and do really well. So yeah, it's definitely a problem, and it's pretty much come out. Like, everybody is saying yes, it will be banned at the next BNR announcement, but we're still living in a Hogak world. And as was tweeted out this week by Aaron Forsyth, who works for Wizards of the Coast, they are not emergency banning. And this week we've had a few discussions amongst ourselves. Chewy and I, we had a good chat the other night on the sort of
a robust discussion, I'd call that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was good, actually. Like, we both sort of took either side of the debate as to whether it should be emergency banned or not. It's a bit of a moot point now because they've said that they're not doing it. But yeah, it's definitely a topic that will be hotly discussed. And most likely, if you listen to other podcasts, they will touch on that a fair bit more than we're going to tonight. But just quickly, what are people's thoughts? Like, did you wish that it was getting the emergency ban? Like, forgetting the, you know, the people wanting to play and whether it's good for the game overall and that sort of stuff. But for you personally and your tournament this weekend, what would you have preferred?
I would have preferred an emergency banning this past Monday, like when they had a window to do the announcement, because A, I've got a tournament and Wizards should consider me.
yes, it's always considering you specifically.
Yeah, it's modern MCQ season and Grand Prix Vegas, and they're going to have coverage on that. And I think they've missed a trick on having a popular format with good coverage that will be in Vegas, and they've missed a trick there, and that's what's disappointing. We've had, you know, degenerate formats before where you know, decks have been dominant, and that's just part of Magic, and especially part of non-rotating formats like Modern. But yeah, it's disappointing that I'm now not interested in watching the coverage of GP Vegas. I might still put it on, but I'm not going to, you know, dedicate any time to it.
Yep. What are you other guys thinking, Cracker and Chris?
Yeah. Well, given I'm going to play it this weekend, I'm pretty happy they haven't.
yes.
But I made that decision simply because they didn't. Like, it was always in the back of the minds that it was pretty likely. I'm actually not overly surprised they didn't. And part of it is the fact that it is super degenerate, right? And, like, if people talk with fondness, even though that's possibly not the right word, about Eldrazi Winter and Combo Summer and stuff like that, right? They're these kind of mythical time periods where there was this completely busted thing. And if you weren't doing that, you were doing it wrong, is a way that, like, the people that played through those kind of periods talk about it. So it's not good for the game. The card is stupid, right? It's a colossal mistake, and everyone knows that. But I think that it creates for an interesting narrative. And given that it's only another couple of weeks, you can see why they've decided to let it run its course.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Chris, do you think it really affects anything for you for this weekend, or don't care too much?
I'm actually okay with them not emergency banning it. I think based on all the testing we did on Saturday, a lot of that was focused on Hogax. If they weren't emergency banned it, I would have felt like half our testing session was a waste of time and we spent all this time focusing on, you know. So I think when it comes to tournament prep, I'd actually preference certainty over uncertainty. And it's like,
yeah,
I'd rather know that, yep, cool, it's probably going to get banned on the 24th or whenever it is. But when I'm testing, I kind of want to know what I'm up against. And I don't want my testing session to be a waste, especially when we're all so strapped for time. So yeah. I'm actually good with it being the way it is for that reason in particular, but I have no doubt it's going to get banned. And I think Mark Rosewater admitted on Twitter that their latest mistake was a hybrid black-green card that they made. So that probably speaks volumes.
Just a long line of mistakes.
Yeah. Is that the vigilant angel that they were talking about making as part of that quiz they did a while ago?
It must be.
Morrow is pretty cryptic sometimes. Scott, if you don't know, you don't have no idea who Morrow is. Morrow is Mark Rosewater. He gets called Morrow. Yeah, he's got a card, doesn't he? The Morrow card.
Yeah, it's the power and toughness equal to the number of cards in your hand.
Yeah, so he's the head designer for Wizards. Basically, he has his hand in everything to do with Magic. He's not the head honcho. There's the directors and all that sort of stuff above him, but he's basically the top dog for when it comes to Magic design and all that sort of stuff. So yeah,
and has been for a really long time.
Yeah. He's been there for ages. So
yeah, it's all his fault.
Yeah, it's definitely it's always his fault. Everyone just hit him up on Twitter and give him your abuse because it's always his fault, as I'm sure he loves people telling him. But Scott, I don't think you really care too much about Hogak, whether it's there or not at the MCQ.
No,
don't really care either way.
I don't really have an opinion because I don't really know the deck well enough anyway. but I am curious.
You're struggling just to know your deck.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to focus on mine. So did they give an explanation as to why they didn't ban it though, knowing that there was such
basically just a quick tweet just saying then there's not going to be an emergency ban and that there's a scheduled ban announcement in a couple of weeks, which we knew anyway. So like I've been saying over the last couple of weeks, it was same sort of thing as what Chris was saying. We kind of just wanted to know either way, like forgetting personal opinions and all that sort of stuff. People just needed to know, is it getting banned or is it not? That way they can, you know, adjust their testing and all that sort of stuff accordingly. So we now know, which means we can go into this weekend with the testing that we've done and know that it's actually valuable and we haven't wasted our time and, hopefully come out with a good result. So another thing that was we're not going to touch on too much, but was actually announced today is pretty massive changes to the pro level structure or the
organized play.
Yeah, organized play. That's the
term. We actually have a structure now, right?
Yeah. So we won't go into it too much, but basically the end of last year, they made some massive changes to the pro structure and the organized play structure, which had been mostly the same for quite a long time. They made some changes and they introduced something called the MPL, the Magic Pro League. So effectively, there were 32 players who were on salaries or effectively salaries to play Magic and stream Magic, a good salary too, $75,000 US a year, which I'd be happy with that. For playing Magic, that sounds good to me. But there was no announcements really around that in terms of how you get into the league, how you go out of the league, what's in it for other players or players in sort of those mid-pro levels and that sort of stuff. So there's been a lot of people complaining. we've had discussions about people going on about the seeming entitlement of these sort of mid-level pro players from our perspective is quite amusing. But there was nothing there. There was no clarity in how that process was going to work. And basically today they cleared all that up in one big announcement. They announced what's going to happen next year and the following year and how you get into that, how you get into the Magic Pro League. They announced new tournament structures and new events. So it looks like 2020 is going to be a pretty cool year for Magic. I'm pretty excited about it. They announced, there's going to be three what are now called player tours. They used to be called pro tours. Then they changed them to Mythic Championships.
And now they're PTs again.
Now they're player tools, which is, yeah, still PTs, so everyone can still
it's because no one called them MCs.
Yeah, right? everyone can stop Everyone's fumbling over calling them the wrong thing.
PTs. And, yeah. I love that. There's going to be like 4 MC winners and then just a bunch of PTs again. It's like, yeah, what happened in 2019? It's like, we don't talk about 2019 anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, they put out a big article there, and we'll link to that in the show notes from this episode so you can go and have a full read. If you're interested in becoming, you know, a not even a full pro level player, but a player that's aspiring to earn money from playing Magic, it's definitely worthwhile having a read of that and going through what you can do and how you can qualify for these things, because it was a pretty good article. I read through all of it, and it was quite good. But yeah, it kind of outlines all that there. Anyone got any quick thoughts on those sorts of changes? I know a couple of you guys read the article today.
Yeah, I
think there's some good stuff in there. There's paths from Arena, which are a little more clearly defined, and they're also linking into the SCG tour, which I think is a really, really clever idea.
Yeah, and they did announce that they're aiming to partner with other tournament organisers for series, the tournament organisers that run series. So there's the LATAM one, which I think is in Brazil, I think it was, for that one, which is like a, you know, equivalent to Star City Games. But who knows, hopefully in Australia we can get someone like Good Games or Next Level Games or one of the sort of chain stores.
Just keep a lookout for the Magic Beans qualifier in a city near you.
That'd be nice. Well, you never know. We might be able to get something like that going. But yeah, hopefully somebody can put something like that together where we can have local events that will feed into the player tours, PTs, and then that, you know, leads into the other high level play. So yeah, pretty cool announcement, and hopefully that quietens down the pros and their complaining about having nothing to play for and all that sort of fun stuff. The other podcast will no doubt touch on that. We've got too many things to talk about today. We won't go into that in depth. But at some point, we'll go through the sort of full breakdown on organized play and, Scott, where you can aspire to be playing in, you know, 2 years' time or something like that when you're traveling around the world playing Magic.
That sounds about right.
What are you talking about, man? Scott's about to spike this MC and go play in Richmond.
Just remember us, right? Just remember us.
I'll try to. I actually said off before we started the podcast, I said I don't want to go to Richmond. So,
yeah, no, Richmond in the States, not Richmond in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I don't want to go. It's too scary.
I think a prize for getting free travel or whatever to Richmond in America, which is like, I don't know, 45 minutes from where I live, that's not really worth it. I think I'd prefer to go to the States. But. All right. We'll get a bit more stuck into what we've been up to in terms of our testing and go from there. So this weekend, we were lucky enough that our wives let us out of the house again, and we all managed to congregate at Chris's place, which was quite nice. Scott, this was actually your first time meeting most of the guys that are on the cast. Is that's right? You met a few of them before? Chris, maybe. Chris.
I think I might have met Chris once before when we went to one of those draft nights in the city, but I'm not sure if he was there or not. But otherwise, I've met Joel and Chili before.
Yep. No, it was good. It was good to actually have all of us together all at the same time. And yeah, the intention was to get a bit of testing done. So we knew in a week's time we were going to be getting to that MCQ. So it was time to sort of knuckle down, do some proper testing, and lock in what decks we're going to play. I think we all came in, you know, we've spoken about it on the last couple of casts. We all came in with an idea of what decks we were thinking of playing, what we wanted to test. We had a good idea of what the metagame decks were going to be and what things were going to look like. But yeah, we sort of, the aim was to finish the night and go, okay, this is what I'm going to play. So for you, Scott, this was your first time at a testing session. So I guess this is basically your Blaster Watch. This is what you've been doing this week.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you decided on your deck and you came and you gave it a run through. So how did you find the night? This was sort of your first time really of playing competitive modern decks. And I know there was plenty of times where you were deer in the headlights. You didn't know what was going on. But how did you find that whole process?
Oh, it was good. It was very beneficial. I mean, I worked out early on in the piece before I came that night what deck I was going to play. I think I put two decks up originally. And I got a very polite way of Shorty saying that they're rubbish decks.
casual. I said they're casual.
You said they're casual. But
very casual.
Very in capital letters. So so I think that was a hint that these weren't the decks to play. So I went back with my mono red deck. I've gone with a Bushwhacker one, a deck which I used to play with quite a few years ago anyway. So it just needed a little bit more modifying, which you guys helped out with. You sort of told me what cards I should be introducing, which I have now done. First time I've ever used a sideboard in my life, so that was good. But I think for me, being able to play against some of these decks that are going to totally destroy me over the weekend, I think it was good to see that I actually had a couple of wins. A couple of times when whoever I was playing with just had to fold in the end, so that was good. And that was also because they were probably drawing badly anyway. But there were a couple of times when I think my deck probably would have won anyway. So that was nice. It was good for the ego, I suppose. And going into this weekend, it gave me that little bit of a boost. Also, it was beneficial for me to sort of see the mechanics of what's involved. We've talked about it before. When I play a lot of stuff online, the computer does it all for you anyway. So to be able to sit down in front of a real opponent and remember, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. You've got to shuffle your cards. You've got to give your cards to your opponent to split. All those sorts of things. Like if you in the second game, if you decide to pull something out of your sideboard, you've got to shuffle it again and make sure that you give it back to the opponent. All these sort of the decorum of the game that you've got to sort of follow.
Yeah, they're the things that, like, for anyone who's
procedures.
Played, yeah, yeah, anyone procedures. Who's played at least a couple of tournaments, it's just sort of taken for granted that you know these things. But for someone in your situation who hasn't done that before, it's all brand new. And yeah, like sitting down and sort of next to you and trying to give you a few pointers while we're playing, it was very clear that, we kind of need to start from the basics and go through. And we sort of mentioned when we first started this podcast that we were hoping to sort of build you up to tournaments. You've decided to jump into the deep end and go straight into a bit of
not
a higher level.
Not just the deep end, he's off the 5-meter platform.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting weekend.
Hopefully it's not a belly flop when he hits the water off that platform.
It's funny. I was excited going into it. Like when we first started talking about it a couple of weeks ago, I thought, yeah, this will be fun. This is what I want to do. Now, as we're sort of getting a few days prior, I'm starting to have that apprehension thinking, what are we doing? This is going to cost us $50 just to enter this thing. Why am I doing this?
Well, like I said to you, like we caught up at a family dinner couple of weeks ago when sort of just after you'd posted those very casual decks that you were considering playing, and
the dinosaurs were awesome, man.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they would have been fun on a kitchen table, but yeah, we sort of said like
tell us what you really think, Shorty.
Oh, I'm not holding back.
Oh, he did, yeah, he told me.
Shorty is gacking Scott right now.
Yes. If you're going to spend $50, go to a tournament, put in any like prep and all that sort of stuff, you don't want to go there and like not even win a single game. Like that's demoralizing for anybody. And even if you go through the day and you don't win a match, a round, if you've at least won some games and your deck's been competitive, then you can leave that going, okay, this was fun, I had a good time. Like, yeah, I didn't win any rounds, but I still had fun and I won some games. But if you play a super casual deck that's not going to be competitive at all, that's not going to be the experience you're going to have. So the next time a tournament comes up, you've got that in your back of your mind of, oh, I don't know if I want to go. It might be the same sort of thing and that sort of stuff. So the deck that you're playing is a competitive deck. Like you're playing the 8-whack Goblins deck, which can be super explosive. And I know for some of us that tested against you on the weekend, we got crushed in some games.
It should
be good, but there's gonna be a lot for you to remember.
Looking at the decks that I had originally posted on Discord, I can now clearly see a distinction between them and this one. I can after goldfishing this now for the whole week, I'm happy with the results I'm getting. So we'll wait and see what happens. I'm not expecting the world, but you said, if I can get a couple of wins here and there, not necessarily in rounds, but just to win a couple of games every now and then would be good.
Yep, no, that's good. Except for the last picture you posted up on our Discord with three Blood Moons. I was not happy to see three Blood Moons getting posted because I'm sure I'm going to end up playing against you in round one, and my Tron lands are not going to appreciate your three Blood Moons will be coming in from the sideboard. So
you guys were the ones that suggested I put that in.
It's our fault.
It's your own fault.
No, it's cool. Yeah, well, hopefully you have a good experience, and yeah, you learn as much as you can from the day and soak it all in, and yeah, just have fun. We'll touch on our expectations sort of at the end of the cast, but yeah, I reckon you'll do pretty well, and you'll at least win a few games, and you might snag a couple of matches here and there. So
hopefully,
but. Yeah, so part of our testing at Chris's place this weekend, we tried to be a little bit more methodical, and Chris actually went to the effort of putting together a bit of a spreadsheet to track all that stuff. So do you want to give us a bit of a rundown of what you managed to put together, Chris?
Yeah, so we thought we'd try and be pretty professional with this, which is unlike us, but we ended up trying to record all the results of all the testing that we did. So we were recording who was playing what deck, who we were playing against, wins, losses, whether we mulliganed, and whether it was pre or post board. So that was all the stuff that we were recording. I think we tested with about 6 or 7 decks. And
yeah, sounds about right.
We ended up getting in about 30... I think we recorded 33 matches, but we played a few more than that, but that's kind of where we landed. So, yeah, it was good. We got not a big sample size, but enough to give us a bit of a gut feel, which is like we spoke about in the last cast, enough to get a feel for the decks and what was working and which matchups were tough, which matchups were good.
Yeah, and I think, like for all of us, we saw a bit of a change in our thoughts throughout the night once we actually sat down and played the decks. And like you said, Chris, that's one thing we touched on in our last podcast is, yeah, we don't have the time to play 100 matches of this versus that and whatever. We can only jam a few games, and we have to use that to, and a bit of intuition and a bit of our gut feeling and that sort of stuff to go, you know what, this deck doesn't feel good, this deck doesn't suit me, I'm not happy playing with this deck, I don't like the matchup, whatever it is, to help us, you know, inform the decisions that we're going to make. So yeah, Chewy, like you were pretty set on your deck going into the night. Yep. how did you find, so you decided on Eldrazi Tron the last time we spoke. How did you find that in the testing process, and what was sort of your outcomes from that?
Yeah, I learned a lot, which was kind of what I was hoping to do. There were some matches that I lost that, you know, sometimes you learn more from a loss than you do from a win. So, you know, I made some mistakes, made some plays in the wrong order against certain matchups that highlighted that decision that might come up. So I'm sure there'll be more throughout the day on Saturday that I, you know, some I'll get right and some I won't, but hopefully those ones that came up, I'm able to, you know, lock them away, and they can be a little more intuitive for me having that testing. So the deck felt really good, except against Hogak. It felt really good against every other deck in the format, basically. So I'm hoping that we have a you know, a bit of a diverse field, you know, at a local level.
Yeah, hopefully we'll, I would expect it to be fairly diverse. I'm definitely not expecting 20% Hogak.
No, and you know, I'm just going to lean on those you know, chalices. And I was testing a number of different inclusions, trying to, you know, fit my deck within the metagame a little better. We spoke about it on the bonus episode where, you know, the format and the metagame can evolve beyond just sideboard cards. So I was trying different things to, you know, try to improve that Hogak matchup, but ultimately, I've come down to a fairly stock list. You know, the deck's been around for a little while. What's good is good. They haven't printed any new Eldrazi lately, so the core of the deck hasn't changed too much. And the Khan the Great Creator sideboard, I'm pretty happy with. I'm pretty settled on. I think Tuesday, the day before yesterday, I made the last sort of change to that, and I'm pretty locked in. So hopefully I just get to play against Phoenix all day and lock them out of the game. So yeah, we'll see. I think the deck's good against random decks, you know, that you see at some modern tournaments. I'm not saying random as in a, you know, that's not a negative thing. It's not a bad deck, but something that's not, you know, the top tier metagame decks that are still competitive. I think it's good against those decks. It's very good against some of the top decks like Burn and Phoenix. And I hope that my sideboard cards get there against GAC, basically. So that's where I'm at. I feel good about it. I'm confident. So
yeah, and like I said, yeah. you found you made a couple of mistakes, like play errors or wrong decisions, that sort of stuff, just by having that in your brain now. So when you come up against a similar circumstance, rather than that being the first time you faced it, you can go, oh, hang on, I've been in this situation before and this is how I handled it, and I think that was wrong. I'm going to take this other line now, and hopefully that is the correct line and it has the better outcome. So, yeah, even absolutely, just that little bit of testing can go quite a long way for some of those corner case situations that you're not going to come up against all the time.
And playing the other decks against you guys who were testing, you know, the decks that you were thinking of playing, just getting that depth of knowledge on the format, I think is super valuable. I know I've mentioned that before, but understanding the strengths and potentially uncovering some of the weaknesses of other decks, I think is really good. You learn a lot about your own deck by playing the other deck. So there's a lot of value in that as well.
Yeah. So Cracker, you were going into the night pretty set on Cheerios, that high metagame percentage deck of Cheerios.
You know how it is.
Speaking of random decks. But, you had your quality proxied version there ready to go again.
I did, with my proxy
planes. How did you find the night?
Well, I didn't get to stay as long as everyone else. The testing went pretty well. Well, sort of. I learned a lot, but, I mean, the deck is a one-trick pony, right? Like, it is just completely uninteractive, and if you don't kill one of the, you know, two drops on turn two or turn three, there's a really high likelihood that I just grape shot someone to death on, like, turn three pretty much every time, if not turn four, like, guaranteed. And so, like, I was pretty keen to play it based on, you know, the other options that I had experience with. And then, you know, sort of with Hogak in the back of my mind, and I know that you had talked about playing it at one point and Chris had talked about it as well, and then, you know, you guys sort of moved off to different areas. And we all honestly thought still on Saturday that by Monday there was a pretty good chance that we'd see a ban come.
Yeah, right, particularly and I were talking on Monday night, and we were saying, oh, it's highly likely we wake up tomorrow and there's been a Monday American ban announcement.
Yeah, and particularly after the GP results, right? And then also Star City that weekend, like, Hogak had just been absolutely just crushing people. And so sort of Tuesday afternoon, I was, you know, having a scroll through Twitter, and every pro was just like, well, it's not banned. Play this deck.
Yeah, just play the deck.
The deck. And they're just putting up a list, and I'm like, well, I have access to it. It's a strategy that I enjoy. I like casting creatures out of my graveyard. Right. I do. It's fun. Right. And given that no one else had already kind of jumped onto it, I went, all right, well, let's take it for a spin. And so I've been playing it a bunch this week, and it's stupid. The deck is just dumb. So I have abandoned ship to Hogak.
You're playing a meta deck. What is going on? Deck.
I don't know.
Did you say the deck you're thinking of?
No. I still think that deck is really powerful and can really, like, spike it.
You and I had some games where you drew like 30 cards.
Yes.
And you're just like, your go.
Yes, that was exactly right. Like, yeah, there was one point I had storm count of like 29, and you're like, did you hit it?
Am I dead?
Like, nope. I hit three lanes in a row, and that was the end of it. And so, like, it has quite a high fizzle rate. And I've been doing a little bit of testing on X-Mage, which I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, against real people as well as the AI. And I was playing against Affinity last night, and he went turn one Vault Scourge, and I went turn one Faithless Looting, Bin to Hogak and Avenge Vine. He played turn two Cranial Plating. I played Stitcher Supplier, Grave Crawler, brought back Hogak and Vengevine and attacked him for four. It's just like this deck is just...
It's on another level.
It really is. And so, like I was saying, like, given that we know that this is a very small window, I want to say, I played Hogak. The deck was dumb. I'm glad it was gone. But I want the opportunity to do that. And, you know, like, if I'm going to try and win some of the games, then this gives me a good opportunity to do that.
Yep. No, it seems fair. So you've locked into Hogak for the weekend.
I have. And what about you, man? Let's turn the tables and ask you some questions. Because when you came in and sat down, you had a proxied up version of Neoform. And you were like, I just turned one someone. I was like, what? So tell me what your process was.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been flip-flopping for the last few weeks on what deck I was going to play, and sort of going into the testing, it was maybe Mono Red Phoenix, maybe Hogak. I just didn't really know. And then I follow a guy, Jonathan Zhang. He's at Final Nub on Twitter, and he's a champion of the Grishol brand decks, which I've played in the past as well. And he's currently on the Neo brand deck, where you can literally win the game on turn one before your opponent has done anything. If you're on the play, you somehow manage to get a Grizzle brand into play on turn one, and you draw your entire deck, and you put a Laboratory Maniac out on the battlefield and pretend to draw your next card, and you win the game before your opponent does anything. So he's still championing playing that deck, and it's ridiculous, but it's just like the Cheerios deck or anything else, where it's just, you don't care what your opponent's doing, you just do your thing. And sometimes it's you win on turn one, and sometimes it's, oh, I did absolutely nothing for sometimes the entire game, but I'm just lost.
Draw a Nourishing Shoal and you die on the spot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's like you draw, you know, 14 cards off your Grizzle brand and down to one life or something like that, and you don't get a Nourishing Shoal, and it's like, okay, it's your turn, and you lose. So the deck is fun. Like, it was a really fun deck, but I don't think I could play it this weekend, not for this tournament. It's the sort of thing I'd like to take to, you know, a midweek modern tournament or something like that, but not for this weekend. So
what about Izzet Phoenix? That's been kind of your go-to for the last couple of years, and you were
sort of I'd kind of written that off.
Okay.
Yeah, just sort of based on other people's opinions. A lot of people seem to be saying that Izzet Phoenix just was not, it doesn't have a very good Hogak matchup, mm-hmm. and a lot of the other decks that are getting played to beat Hogak, it doesn't have a very good matchup against them either. And like we've sort of mentioned before, that it didn't gain a lot from the London Mulligan. It's been printed Aria of Flame, but it hasn't really gained that much in the last couple of sets. So I'd kind of written that one off, despite the fact that I like that deck. So I'd been sort of gold fishing the mono red Phoenix version with all the prowess creatures. But I just found it felt weird. It almost felt like a combo deck, where it's like, if you have your prowess creature on turn one or two or whatever, and you can play a whole bunch of spells, you're just doing crazy amounts of damage. But if they kill your creature and you don't draw another one, you kind of just do nothing. Like you're almost like a bad burn deck.
Yeah, I was about to say that, because you've taken out eight of your burn slots for these kind of interesting prowess one drops.
Yep. So I'd kind of written that off, and I honestly turned up on the Saturday night and it was like, I don't know what the heck I'm playing. And it was I was definitely leaning towards playing Hogak. The deck is stupid powerful, as we've said a million times. It's very crazy. But I found throughout the night that I was making a lot of errors, just missing small lines where I'd make an attack and they go, I probably shouldn't have attacked with those guys that I didn't need to attack with, because he's just killed my Hogak and now I can't cast it. And like little things that I would learn, but I didn't feel confident playing the deck. But I did spend a good amount of time jamming games with good old just plain green Tron, the deck that's been around for forever. I've enjoyed playing that deck a ton, like recently in the last couple of years, and I've spent a lot of time putting in the work to learn how to play it properly and how to mulligan properly and things like that. And by the end of the night, it was like, well, I'm not confident in playing Hogak. I'm going to miss too many things, but I am confident playing Tron, and it's good in the metagame right now. So I'm going to roll out the Tron and try and turn three Karn people. And
there are less things to remember.
Yeah. Well, like Tron's the good. Tron's the good guy now.
Really difficult. And also, how is Tron good guy? That is. Yeah. I don't know about that. Like,
Tron's the good guy, you've got to play it.
I'll be the villain. I don't care. But yeah. Like, Tron is still not the good guy. You're just like the bad henchman or something at the moment.
Yeah, hey, still took down the MC at a Field of Hogak. So there's something going for
it. It did.
Yeah. And I'm just lucky, like same as you, Cracker, that I literally own almost nothing from Tron. I don't even physically own Tron lands. But luckily, I have this very good friend who has a pre-built deck already for me that's sitting on my desk right now. So,
got his number?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that guy sounds really great. Maybe you should get in contact with him, Chris. You could learn a few things.
Sounds good.
So, yeah, that's what I've ended up on. I think, Chris, overall, I had a pretty good win rate with Tron. You got your spreadsheet handy there from...
Yeah,
the weekend.
You had a solid win rate, but most of it was just crushing me, so...
and me, when I was playing Cheerios and you played three Oblivion Stones in three consecutive
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was...
that was just nauseating.
Yeah. It's like 85% win rate for the night. Not a big sample size, like eight
there
games
is no,
or something.
No way that's happening on the weekend, but... I mean, if I can get 60% win rate on the weekend, I'll be pretty happy. But yeah, so I've locked into Tron. That's what I'm going to go with. It's a deck I like, and it's a deck I've got experience with. So we'll see how that goes. So how did you go, Chris? You just mentioned you spent a lot of time losing to me, but what did you find from the weekend?
Yeah, I feel like I'm all over the shop because I'm pretty sure last cast I was like, yep, Hogak, it's busted, and it is. But I was like, pretty sure I'm going to play that. And failing that, I really like Urza and my fallback is humans. Played all three of those. And actually, I'm not playing any of those decks. That's not where I settled at all. So my experience. So I actually played a lot of Urza and potentially I played poorly. I don't know. Again, small sample size, so I don't want to read too much into it, but I just got bad feels from the deck. I got crushed by Tron a lot. I'm not sure how many games I played. I played a few. I just didn't get a good feel from it. And I also haven't had a huge amount of practice with it. So I was off that pretty quickly. And I thought, I committed to humans as my fallback plan. So I jumped on humans. I think I played against Tron with humans a few times. And just got absolutely crushed.
I think you played against Chewie on Eldrazi Tron for a few games.
Yeah.
It felt closer than what the results say. But, I was like, oh, that felt really 50-50. But then you were like, you 6-2'd me or something.
Yeah, that's right. So I had a pretty bad matchup there. I don't know. I then ended up reverting back to another kind of pet deck of mine, which was Hardened Scales, and played a bunch of games with that, played a couple against Hogak, and a few more against Eldrazi Tron, and the deck just felt really, really good. I've played that deck a lot.
It looked good, looked powerful.
Yeah, it certainly has got a number of angles that it can attack from, I think that's kind of what I want at the moment. I want something that's proactive, and I want something that can kind of battle with what's going on. I can grow my stuff bigger than a Hogak, so that's kind of sweet.
I was playing the Hogak against you, and there was definitely times where it's like, I've got like 20 power on the battlefield, and I can't even attack. Like, what? You've got a 10-10 ballista over there. Like, I'm just dead.
Yeah. So, learning what the, like we said in the last cast, learning what the matchups are about is key. And even though we didn't get a lot of time and we didn't play a huge amount of matches, I felt like I got a really good feel for for what each of the games were about, and I've been playing a bit of Hardened Scales throughout the week as well, just gold fishing, and jumped on X Mage a bit as well, and just kind of getting some reps in. But that's where I ended up landing, and I'm pretty comfortable with that decision. I'm comfortable playing the deck, and I think it's good enough to compete. Well, I mean, my deck and your deck, Shorty, top two at the MC. Can't be wrong, right?
That's right. But you have spent a fair bit of time playing that deck. You've learned a lot of the lines, and it similar to Tron, it hasn't changed that much in recent times, like since you spent a bit of time playing that deck. So it should all translate over pretty well.
Not a lot of new pieces.
Yeah, you've got a lot of the sort of hard to find lines figured out in that deck. So just enjoy your day of doing math and ticking over dice and
sounds amazing.
My head's hurting just thinking about it.
My plan is to cast Hogak and then just look at my opponent like, do I win?
Do you concede? I've got a Hogak. It's turn two.
I just go 1+1+1=7.
Yes.
Yeah.
Me too. It's the decks for people that can't do math.
Yeah, well, I think Scott
just has to count down from 20.
My plan is to get people to 10. So that's that's my plan.
And then just shoot them with a ballista.
Fall in on the ballista plan or infect plan.
Yeah, infect. Well, that's the other one. That's the one I always forget out of that deck. So I'm glad I've got a ghost quarter handy just in case for that deck, because dying to infect is not much fun.
Yep.
But yeah, so that was our testing. So yeah, I got there at 5:30 or something like that, and I left at what, like 1:30 in the morning or stupid. So we had a solid amount of testing.
It was a late night.
Yeah, Cracker was there for a few hours, and Scott was there till fairly late as well, and Chewy was there until I left. So yeah, it was a late night, but we got in a lot of testing, and like we said previously, it's given us that opportunity to get a feel for the format, get a feel for the decks, find what we like, and settle on a deck. So I've spent this week knowing I'm playing Tron this weekend, so I can go back and, you know, find articles and sideboard guides and free sideboard guides if you're up on your Twitter stuff these days. Find all that sort of stuff and do my research and kind of get my head into playing Tron this weekend and get my head into being the sort of bad guy, not the full bad guy kind of mentality sort of thing. So yeah, I think we're all as happy as we can be for the amount of time that we've had. So yeah, I'm locked into green Tron. Chewy, your Eldrazi Tron locked in.
Yeah, lock it in.
Scott's on the mono red.
Yep, got those all the way.
Bushwhackers, eight whack goblins. Cracker's being the bad guy on the Hogak, and everyone's going to be booing him all day.
So yep. you and Cracker need to wear Darth Vader t-shirts.
And Chris is just doing maths all day with hardened scales. So we've all ended up on different decks.
Pocket protector.
which is good. It'll make it interesting. I'm just hoping that I don't have my usual round one pairing against Chewy, which I don't even know how many times that's happened over the years, Chewy. It would be a lot.
Yeah, it feels like it's like 10% of tournaments we go to.
Yeah.
And
it's every pre-release I've been to with both you guys, I think.
Yeah. So, no, it should be fun. Definitely looking forward to it. So, yeah, we thought we'd have a bit of a chat about sort of what to expect if you're going to play one of these tournaments. So we're recording on the Thursday night. We're hoping that this podcast will be out to you on the Friday so you can have a bit of a listen. But even if you're not going to this tournament, there'll be tournaments coming up, no doubt, that you're going to. So, yeah, what to expect when you go to this sort of level of tournament. And I mentioned it earlier, we're sort of hoping with Scott to build him up, you know, go to a couple of F&Ms and then sort of slowly make his way up to the higher level stuff, but he's jumping into the deep end. So we kind of got to give him the crash course of what it's like playing at this sort of level tournament. So one thing that we won't go into too much tonight, but there's a thing called REL, which is rules enforcement level. And basically that dictates how strict the judges are who run the tournaments effectively, sort of what when you're playing at the lower levels, like there's casual REL, it's basically like you're playing at home and you can sort of take things back and you don't have to be too serious about what you're doing. But when you get right up to the top levels, I think professional is the highest one, which is gets played at PTs again. Everything has to be 100%. You got to be very careful in what you're doing. So the MCQs are played at competitive REL, which is one step down from professional, but it still requires a certain level of strictness, I guess, is the word in sort of things that you do. So one of the things that we sort of mentioned to you, Scott, on the weekend is keeping track of life totals. So I know with games that I've played with you in the past and often for us just playing sort of casual games, you might use one of those spin down life counters to track your life, or you'll use a phone. You know, Cracker and Chris, you guys are always pulling out your phones for keeping track of life totals. You can't do any of that sort of stuff at competitive rules enforcements. You both players are responsible for keeping track of life totals. So you need a pen and paper. Which we'll touch on sort of as well, like the things that you're going to need to bring. But yeah, you need to keep track of your life total, your opponent's life total. And this is something that I saw you sort of missing quite often, Scott, on the weekend, was someone would crack a fetch land. Do you remember what a fetch land does?
Yeah, with the
put you on the test.
Lose a life. Is that the one where you lose a life? Yep. And I wasn't recording those losses of one life.
Yeah, and then they go and get a land. Yep. Mm. So in Modern, that's something that happens all the time. Like, almost every single deck plays fetch lands, and people just go, I'm just going to crack my fetch, and I'm going to shock, and whatever. When they say those things, they're telling you, I'm taking one life from cracking my fetch land, and I'm going to take two damage from going and getting my shock land or my dual land and putting it into play untapped. You need to make sure you're keeping track of those sorts of things, because otherwise the life totals get out of whack, and you have a different life total recorded to your opponents, and then that can lead to confusion in the game states and things like that. So, yeah, we won't go in sort of right into the nitty gritty of those sorts of things, but what are other things that I guess sort of directing it at Scott, either Scott, if you've got some questions, or if any of the other guys want to chime in on things that people need to remember when they're going to these sorts of tournaments.
The thing that I always tell people that are new and new to playing at a higher level is don't be afraid to call a judge. Like, calling a judge.
For starters, how does that process work?
You put your hand in the air, and as loud as you possibly can, you yell judge. And you keep your hand up until the judge gets to you, because, you know, there's going to be 200 people in the room. They need to get there. There'll be the, you know, the people standing around dressed in black, and they'll come to you, and they're there to keep the tournament running smoothly. They're also there to hand out penalties, but the handing out penalties is something that new players can kind of get stuck on. The idea of, like, dobbing on your opponent puts people off. Oh, I don't want to call a judge for this. But the judges are honestly there to help. Like, they're volunteers. They're awesome. They're not there to, you know, power trip 99% of them.
Some of them.
Anyway. Yeah, 99% of them are really good. But if you are unsure, especially, you know, as a new player, you're going to see cards that you've never seen before. If you're unsure, like, oh, my opponent did this thing, and he casts his Neoform card, and then he's got this big black thing, and then he's like losing life drawing all these cards. If you're not following on, yeah, if you're not following on, just go tell your opponent, oh, I'm a bit unsure. Can you know? I'm just going to call a judge, and your opponent will be fine with that. If they're not fine with that, they're probably doing something dodgy.
Yes.
And then the judge will come over and like take you through it. And, you know, often they'll just stand there and watch. But, yeah, there's a sort of, I don't know, a stigma about calling judges, especially for new players. But it's something that we don't do enough, I think, as Magic players. Like, yeah, if you've got any sort of uncertainty, put your hand up, yell judge, and someone will come help you out.
Is it okay to ask the opponent to explain what they're doing, or is that not really the thing you do?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't recommend it because... You know, there will be that 1% of Magic players that are trying to do a dodgy. So the judges are there for that. So it's a thing where you're, you know, don't trust your opponent. It's a competitive thing. So even if your opponent's super nice, just call the judge. They'll have plenty of them there. And it can't do any harm in calling a judge. But if you believe what your opponent's saying, then potentially... could cause harm to your Magic experience. Yeah,
your opponent doesn't always have your best interests at heart, and often they will mention that at the start of the tournament that, yeah, you will get those slightly suspect people, and they'll say, oh, no, this is how it works, whatever, just believe me, you know, I'm fine, whatever. If you're ever not sure, stick your hand up and call a judge. That's what they're there for.
I think just communicating. You literally, like, can't communicate too much with your opponent. If you the reason that people can get themselves into trouble with game states and things like that is that they have inadvertently misrepresented something that they were doing, or not inadvertently, but like just say, I'm going to cast this spell, right? Or I play a mountain. And if you just say, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and if someone says, I crack a fetch, then you read, I've got you at 15 life now, and just confirm those details with people. And that way it's clean, it's clear, you don't have to worry about kind of, like, it just helps you keep track of everything. And particularly with your deck, man, like, if you think someone's at 18 and they're at 12 because you've miswritten down a couple of things, like, that's the difference in your mind as to whether you can win a game or not. And one of the other things is you'll come across just so many different variants of cards that you will know but have never seen before. Like, there'll be full art, textless versions, foil versions.
Cryptic command. Doesn't do all those things.
So, foreign cards, like in my Living End deck, I've got some Korean stuff, I've got some Japanese stuff, I've got some French things, because people like to do fun things to their decks, right? And so you'll look at this card and you're like, I have no idea what any of those words are. And so in that case, you can just like, listen, I need, it's called Oracle Text, and that is basically the clear explanation of what that card does. And you can go, need the Oracle Text, judge. And so what will happen is a judge will come over, they'll show you the official Wizards website, and explain to you exactly what that card does to make sure that you understand.
Oh, so those cards are legal?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, because as long as it is a legal printing from Wizards, they can have lots of different versions of it, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you're ever unsure, someone plays a spell or whatever, and you go, I can't read it, it's in Chinese or Russian or something like that, or yeah, it's a textless foil card or something, whatever. Yeah, it's in Phyrexian. Then yeah, you can ask your opponent, oh, what does this do? But if you're getting any sort of weird vibes off your opponent, then just say, oh look, I just want to call a judge just to get them to tell me. One thing to remember is you're not allowed to pull out your phone during a game, and that includes in between the games. You're not allowed to use electronic devices, so. Yeah, you can't pull out your phone and look up what this card does or anything like that. You need to get the judge to do it. Yeah, that's just something to be aware of. Did you have questions on anything, Scott?
Oh, I've got plenty of questions.
go for it. Fire them off.
One of the things I wanted to clarify was we talked on the weekend about having a little notation sheet with you. You're allowed to write things down onto a sheet and take that with you. And yes. And I was going to have just a list of the cards that are in my side deck and what decks are going to be potentially better against, you know, so I can remind myself, okay, well, I've got to take this card out and swap it for that card if I'm playing against that particular type of deck. Is there anything that is not allowed to be written on that sheet of paper? You know, like, is there anything that's sort of taboo?
You're not allowed to have, you can't have, I don't think you can have notes on, like, other players or previous games. Is that right? Anyone?
I'm not 100% sure on that.
I think you're allowed to have anything written down that you want.
Yeah, you can have any sort of notes.
Or printed notes. Yep. You're just not allowed on any electronic devices during the round.
You can't whip out your iPad in between games, okay. No.
So as
sorry, go for it.
I was just going to say, so the sheet of paper you can have, like if I was purely going to have it to remind myself that this particular card in my sideboard is going to be better against this particular deck, there, that's okay to have.
Yeah, so a really common thing that that a lot of players will bring along is a sideboard guide. So I think that's what you're talking about, Scott. Yeah, so that's where and I think Chewy Shorty, I don't know, someone was mentioning earlier about, you know, going back, trawling articles, looking at different matchups and sideboard guides and cards that, you know, pros or whatever are recommending to bring in certain matchups, what to take out. So they're really, that's a really important thing to prepare and have on you. And it just saves so much mental bandwidth on the day. Like I think we've mentioned a few times, you'll be exhausted at the end of the day. Like I think it's 8 or 9 rounds. It'll be
8 rounds.
Yep. And so it's like, it's a long day and you're thinking a lot, and any kind of shortcuts like sideboard guides, that kind of thing, where you can kind of whip that out and not have to, you know, take up that mental bandwidth between matches, having to think about, oh, what do I bring in, what do I bring out, is super helpful. So definitely recommend doing that.
Okay. And just...
Yeah, so like with your sideboard, just this week or like on Discord or whatever, just look at the cards that are in your sideboard. You need to know what you're bringing them in for. Why is this card in your side? And this is a mistake that a lot of players, and I'm 100% guilty of this as well, but you focus so much on your main deck and it's like, oh, I've got cards in my sideboard, but I don't actually know what they're there for. And then it's not till you actually get into the match and you go, oh, hang on, now I've got to think about what to bring in and what to take out. And that's what Chris was saying, like you don't want to have to use all your mental bandwidth trying to think about that sort of stuff. So if you can sit down and go, okay, he's playing this deck. All right, well, in game 2, I'm going to take these cards out, put these cards in, then you don't have to think about that sort of stuff. So, yeah, go through your sideboard this week and have a bit of a look at what matchups you would bring them in for, and then, yeah, put together a thing of notes that you can refer back to between your games.
Speaking of notes, you can take notes during your games, Scott. So if your opponent has an effect that makes them reveal a card, so if they play Khan the Great Creator, the Planeswalker, and then go and get an artifact card from their sideboard, you can write that down. Like, you just write it down on your life pad and go, okay, I need to play around, you know, Wormcoil Engine. What am I going to do? And, you know, maybe mono red, you don't see a lot of that, but you can, you know, give yourself that prompt. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Okay. So to write things during the match.
Goblin Guide will reveal the top card of a library at combat. So that is potentially one to remember. Good example. So.
Cool. Any more questions, Scott?
Yeah, just more in the vein of what to take on the day. So I registered online earlier this week, and there was a section in the website where you could actually upload your deck list as well. So I've done that. Do I need to take that deck list along with me as well on the day, or do they automatically have it? It's a stupid question.
Yeah, no, you don't need to bring a hard copy. That's
okay,
fine.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that sort of leads into the next thing that we're going to sort of talk about is what are the things you need to make sure you're bringing with you on the day. So yeah, first thing, as Scott mentioned, if you haven't pre-registered your deck list, I haven't done that yet. I think you're the only one that has, Scott, but you will need to bring a deck list on the day. And this applies for any of this sort of level tournament. You need to have a deck list that clearly states, you know, your name, your DCI number, and then the cards that are in your deck. And you need to be very clear in what you're writing on your deck list. So a trap that some people fall into is they'll write 3 copies of Chandra in my deck. But there's like, I don't know, 30 Chandras that you could be playing in Modern. So that's not sufficient for a legitimate deck list. So you need to write Chandra, Fire Artisan, or whatever the latest ones are called, so that you're specifying exactly which one it is. So your deck list needs to contain your main deck, which should be normally 60 cards, and a sideboard, which is up to 15 cards. And it clearly needs to say 2 copies of this, 3 copies of this for whatever basic lands, different types of lands, all that sort of stuff. So that's a very important thing that you need to bring with you. The easiest way to do that is you like search on Google for Magic deck sheet or whatever, deck registration form, and you'll find either websites where you can just put the stuff in and it generates it for you and you print it out, or you can find blank ones that you can print out and then write on. What you don't want, and this is what we had the last time we played the last MCQ, an old friend of ours, Wilfie Chewy, obviously you know Wilfie, but remember, he turns up literally like as the tournament's about to start and he's madly filling out his deck list while the tournament's trying to start and that sort of thing. And I couldn't handle doing that. That would stress me out too much and would just not put me in a good mindset for the tournament. Wilfie is a genius, so he's probably perfectly fine. So he's okay with that. But it's just one of those little things you can do in advance. You do it before you get to the tournament so you can turn up on the day and hand it in and you're done. So they will come around and collect those deck lists for people who haven't pre-done them before the first round. You just need to make sure that the deck that you're playing matches what's on your deck list, and randomly throughout the day they will do deck checks where they'll check that your deck list matches what's in your deck. So what other things do we need to make sure we've got with us for the day?
Water. Bring water.
Yes. Water.
Some food as well. Some snacks.
Yeah.
It's a long day.
Yeah, bring food, bring water. Just trying to think of bring dice. Dice are important. I've got to bring my dice. I'm going to be using lots of dice during the day.
Yes.
they're the key things, I think.
Yeah. Life pad.
A spare pen, because I always lose
spare
mine.
Spare pen.
With the life pads, you can just use any pad, can't you? You don't have to...
Yeah, any notepad, just a piece of paper. Like, you can actually use... What's the one called that you've got, Chris? Like, there's a touch screen?
Yeah, there's like a... I don't know, I've got an Ultimate Guard one, but they're like those digital pads that you can clear and just write on and press a button and they wipe. They're really cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, as long as whatever you've got, as long as you can clearly look at the life totals and see where they're at, but ideally also be able to track the changes in the life total, and that's why just using a dice or just using your phone or whatever to tick things down is not good enough, because you need to be able to look at it and go, oh, okay, you lost one life from this fetch land you cracked, and then you lost this, and then you lost this, and whatever, so you can make sure that everything's okay. With the, like Chris mentioned, food and water, where this tournament is this weekend, there are shops nearby, and they always pick places where there's food nearby, but they may or may not have a lunch break. Last time there was a lunch break, this time they may not have a lunch break. So if you, all of your rounds are going really long, you're not going to have much of a break between the conclusion of one round and the start of the next round. So having snacks, this is where I love having kids. My cupboard is always full of snacks. You know, stuff for lunch boxes. So the morning of the tournament, I love raid the cupboard.
Because I can steal their food. Nice.
Exactly.
Hopefully yeah. There's other reasons why you love having kids. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Are they asleep right now?
But bring a bunch of snacks.
Spare sleeves is a good one as well. If you have exactly 75 sleeves and you rip one, then you've got to take one off your sideboard, and then when you want to bring that cut, it's a pain. So in your bag, just have, you know, half a dozen spare sleeves just in case.
Yep, and speaking of sleeves, we were sort of mentioning it pre-cast, it is definitely a good idea to make sure your sleeves are either new, like as in you've just bought them recently, or have not seen much play. There has been obviously some high profile cases of people playing with marked sleeves and getting kicked out of the Magic Pro League and things like that. Hopefully you don't want that. But if you're using a set of old sleeves that you've been using for the last 2 years, the corners are going to be all damaged. They pick up gunk off your hands and all that sort of stuff. If there's
other Magic players,
you pick up gunk from other Magic players. That's disgusting. But yeah, it can lead to people questioning that your sleeves are marked, and you don't want to be doing really well in a tournament and then get disqualified because you've got marked sleeves. So if you do, Scott, I know you're talking about getting some new sleeves for your deck, you know, maybe picking some up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Spend a bit of time shuffling that deck tomorrow, you know, tomorrow night or whatever, because brand new sleeves are super slippery.
Oh, okay.
And you'll be dropping them all over the place, and you sit your library down and it slides off sideways and things like that. So yeah, it's definitely worthwhile spending a little bit of time shuffling and doing that. So we've got food, snacks, water, dice, life pad, pens, obviously your deck. Make sure you don't leave home without the deck. Deck list if you need one. Anything else we can think of that people need to make sure they're bringing? I think that covers most of it.
I bring some Panadol.
Yes, actually. Personally. Yeah, I always have some Panadol in my magic bag.
Yeah.
Because, so the tournament for us on Saturday, the tournament will be 8 rounds. It is, they've already said the pre-registered numbers is over 170, I think, which is going to lead us to 8 rounds. And then if one of us makes the top 8, there's potentially another 3 rounds. So it is like you're literally just sitting down playing cards, and people think, oh, like, how is that tiring? But mentally, it is so draining, and you don't want to be in round 7 and winning, doing really well, and going into round 8 where it's like, oh, if I win this, I'm into the top 8 or whatever, and just have a splitting headache. So yeah, be prepared. If you're a drinker, don't go out the night before drinking. It's just, yeah, you all you're doing is harming your chances of winning the next day. So, yeah, that's a few life tips from me.
I've got one more thing to say.
Yep.
Stuff not to bring. Don't,
okay, go
don't,
for it.
Don't bring folders for trades. Don't bring extra decks. Don't bring stuff that, if you had stolen, would be particularly devastating, right?
Yes.
So, like, some people will load up their bag with, you know, like a commander decks and all that sort of stuff. This is not the place to do that. And unfortunately, like, it happens all the time. I walked away from my deck at a GP in Sydney and got very lucky that I got
that's
back, right? But, like, there are people that will, opportunistic thieves, right? So if all they can steal is your Muesli Bar and some Panadol, like, whatever. But if they steal, you know, like, your folder full of foil Chandras, right, you'd be pretty sad. So, like, if it's extraneous, just leave it at home.
So keep your wallet in your pocket rather than in your backpack, I suppose.
Yeah, well, like, one thing I've found is, like, if you've got a backpack or a bag or whatever, which most people will have, put it under your chair, but, like, half under your chair, half under your legs, if that makes sense, so that you're in physical contact with your bag, because people will, like, they will walk past and go, oh, there's a bag just sticking out of the table there, I'm just going to kick that out of the way, and then pick it up and walk off and hope that I've got someone's wallet and their phone and, yeah, a whole folder full of magic cards that are worth a good bit of money. So it sucks that people are like that, but obviously some people are. So
let's just say that's not really a common thing.
No, it's not. It's not
in the magic community, but you do need to insulate yourself from that.
Yeah, it's just an unnecessary risk that we don't need to take or expose yourself to, is all I'm saying.
Exactly, yep. And the other thing to remember is if you are bringing three commander decks and a bunch of other decks and trade folders and all that sort of stuff, and you've got it in a backpack, you're carrying that backpack around all day. So that's going to stuff your shoulders and your arms and your back and things like that. I know after a full day of playing Magic, my back is cactus just from sitting there tensed up in stressful situations trying to win games. So if I add to that a 10 kilos worth of cards hanging off my back, then yeah, I'll be cactus. So yeah, just a few things to consider. Yeah, I think that's going to give most people a bit of a good idea of sort of what to expect. It's going to be a long day. It's going to be fun, though. There's going to be all of us there. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. We've been talking about it for the last couple of months now, and doing this podcast, it's become our focus. So yeah, it should be a good day. I guess the last thing we wanted to talk about is what are our expectations from the day. So Scott, you sort of mentioned, you know, you want to win some games. Is what's like realistically, what would you consider yourself a goal for the day?
Realistically, I would like to win, I don't know, how many rounds? We're talking eight rounds.
Eight rounds.
If I could win six or seven games out of those eight rounds, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Okay, cool.
You know, like if I could win a round, that would be amazing. That would be my goal, to win an actual round. But we'll wait and see if that actually happens. So if I can win six or seven games out of the whole day, that means that my day hasn't been a total waste of time.
Yep, okay, that's a good, and hopefully at least a couple of those sort of lead to actual match wins, not just game wins.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good place to start. Chewy, what's your expectations for the day? How do you reckon you're going to go? What are you wanting to get out?
Qualify for the PT.
yeah, of course.
Again?
Yes, re-qualify.
Goodness me. We're recording this. This isn't me saying that. So anyway, so my I always start at a pretty personal level. Is I just want to play good Magic, in that I want to make sure I'm doing all the procedures well that we spoke about, because it is a competitive REL tournament. I want to make the right plays, and normally then if you do that, winning kind of happens, assuming you've chosen a half decent deck. But I always feel really good if I have a positive win rate. Like the last MCQ that we went to, we were standard, and I went 5-3, which on just like straight wins and losses is only one win out of top eight. I think 1-6-2 made it. But you walk away going, I've done well. Like that's a decent showing if I, you know, have a more than 50% win rate. That's always the goal. So I guess that's the metric that I walk away from the tournament with. So
It's a good I'm sure you would love to win or top eight, but yeah, it's a realistic goal to set. And like I said, going 5-3 in an eight round tournament, that's actually pretty good. Yeah, you're pretty close to the top end. Like last time you went 5-3 and you ended up in what, like 35th place or 32nd place or something?
Yeah,
like
something
that.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, in the top third somewhere.
Chris, what's your expectations?
Yeah, I'm kind of similar to Chewy. I don't have a goal of necessarily placing somewhere or winning X amount. Magic's a game with a huge amount of variance, so I don't want to put too much weight on that. But I want to focus on playing as well and as tight as I can. And I always aim when I go to these events, like one of the key things for me, one of the key goals is just to learn. I feel like whenever I play at one of these things, you know, there's always, you kind of have these little level up moments. So I'll be certainly looking out for that and wanting to walk away feeling like I've had some kind of level up, or, you know, learn something about my deck or something at the field or something about how I respond under pressure or tilt or whatever it might be. I want to walk away with some kind of lesson or something to take with me into my next tournament to help me do better.
Yep. And yeah, and then that builds. If you continue doing that, if you're learning something from every tournament you play, eventually that leads to success. Like there's those two things go hand in hand.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Yep. Oh, very good. Cracker, what do you reckon?
Much the same.
You're taking it down with this Hogak man, bad boy, aren't you?
Look, that would be amazing, of course, but realistically, I haven't really played against real people with this thing, so I've got some pretty tempered expectations. But if I could come away with a 5-3 or even a 4-4, as long as I'm not 2-6 or something like that, I'll be pretty happy. Mostly feel like I played well. Like the thing that I don't tilt so much when people top deck well or just outplay me, but I get really frustrated when I know that I've made just a really stupid mistake that I shouldn't have done. And if I'd thought about it for 2 seconds longer, then I probably wouldn't have done it. And so that's one of the things that I'm trying to consciously think of is I don't have to play fast. You've got 45 minutes or 50 minutes to get through the round. Instead of trying to finish every turn in 5 seconds, just think about it for a little bit and make sure that you sequence everything properly. So I'm going to try and focus on that sort of thing.
Yep. That sounds good. Yeah, I know the last time I played Tron, it was in the team GP in Sydney where Chewy and Chris and I played in the modern team event, and I played Tron, and I have a game that still haunts me where I made a very small misplay and it cost me the game, which basically knocked us out of the tournament. But but it was something that I thought about for ages and why did I do this? What would have been the better play or whatever? And that was a learning moment for me. And now I'm going back to playing that deck. And if that situation comes up, I know how to deal with it now. But yeah, like Chris was saying, you learn and you build from each tournament. That's a good way to look at it. I'm much the same. If I can finish a day with at least a 50-50 record, a 4-4, then I'm happy. Like Cracker said, it's when you have those days where it's I've got a good deck and I practiced and I still went 2-6, it's not much fun. But yeah, I think realistically I could top 8, but I'm going to have to get lucky. It's modern there's that much variance and crazy decks out there that all it takes is one funny matchup and you're out of it. So, but yeah, I'd like to make top 8, but yeah, realistically a positive record would be great for me. I'd be very happy with that. I think prizes only pay out to top 32. So if one of us could walk away with some prizes, that'd be pretty nice, but yeah,
you can win prizes at these things. That's not been my experience. I get the consolation pack.
Well, if you win enough, Joel, you will get a very big prize and you'll get to go to Richmond.
Okay, I'll take notes.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this episode. Hopefully you've got a few pointers. If you do get a chance to listen to this episode before the MCQ and you're in Melbourne and you're going to be seeing us there, then, well, now you know what we're playing. Good luck trying to figure out which one of us is which. One dead giveaway, my name is Shorty. That might tell you which one I am.
It's one of the two guys over 6 foot.
I reckon people will think Chris is you based on that, right?
The ironic possibly. Play.
Yeah. So, yeah, we might leave it there. Hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. And if you have, feel free to give us some feedback. So, as usual, you can send us an email at magicbeanscast@gmail.com. You can find us over on Twitter at magicbeanscast. We're starting to try and post a few more things on there, get that presence out there. And also Facebook, just search for Magic Beans Cast on Facebook and our YouTube channel. Chewy, what was the last video you put up on there?
Played some Scapeshift in Standard.
We've got a couple of new followers on YouTube too, so yell out to them.
Oh, yeah, do we?
If they're listening to us.
Yeah, very good. It's starting to get the brand out there. So, yeah, make sure you hit us up in all those places. I don't know if any of you guys want to shout out your personal Twitters, but if someone wants to follow me for some reason, I post almost nothing, but you can find me on Twitter at Peace Inc. Anybody else got a Twitter handle they want to shout out?
You can find me at at PolywaffleMTG.
I'm at Joel Hill_.
Yep, you can find me at ChewyMTG.
And I've got no idea what mine is. I think I'm at Blaster Boy.
you're at the real Blaster.
At the real Blaster. That's the one.
Obviously, we're very good at self-promotion and we use Twitter a lot. So
we've got 7 tweets total between us.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, hope you've enjoyed this episode and we'll see you again next time. Good luck in your tournaments if you're playing in the MCQs or any of the GPs coming up, and we will see you next time.
See you later.